The economics profession has a diversity problem. It's not a new problem. Yet the profession's gender imbalance has been a topic of intense debate lately.
A Berkeley undergraduate's thesis on sexism in economics drew widespread media attention amid a broader conversation over the obstacles women face in male-dominated industries like high tech.
Swarthmore professor Amanda Bayer has worked much of her career to address diversity in economics. She's published papers about it, served on the AEA's Committee on the Status of Minority Groups in the Economics Profession, and created an online resource called Diversifying Economic Quality, which promotes inclusive teaching practices in economics. Among other things, Professor Bayer said that bringing more women and minorities into the profession is not just an issue of fairness.
Diversity of individuals within a group affects the productivity of that group.
I'm Chris Fleischer of the American Economic Association.
And I'm Diana Skoder. We recently spoke with Professor Bayer about the scope of the gender gap in economics, what we should do about it, and also about her own experiences confronting gender bias.
You've really looked closely at diversity in the profession, particularly in the last few years. And for the purposes of today, we really wanted to focus on gender diversity in the economics profession. And what I'd like to have you do, just to begin, is kind of outline the problem for us. How significant is the gender gap in the economics profession? And what does it look like compared to maybe some other industries, like the tech industry or others that we've been hearing about?
Well, sure. The gender disparities in the economics profession are striking. They start at the undergraduate level, if not before, continue through PhD programs and into the professorate, such that let me have you guess. What percentage of econ majors at the undergraduate level do you think are female?
I would say maybe fewer than 1/4.
Oh, all right. So we do better than that. About 30% across all types of institutions of econ majors are female.
Still not overwhelmingly great.
No, especially when the undergraduate population is well above 50% female, closer to 60%.
Right. So, and this is even, I mean, the disparity is even huge compared to other social sciences disciplines. You know, why is economics any different than any other discipline?
Well, you know, that's a huge question, but I think it bears some time in just noting the facts that it is different. So the percentage female at the undergraduate level in economics is well below percentage female in other social sciences, in business, in humanities, and even below the percentage female in STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So that relative absence of women in economics occurs also at the graduate level and ultimately among faculty. So economics is an outlier. Many studies have documented the problems within economics for women, as well as for other minority groups or underrepresented minority groups. The question as to why economics is an outlier is a complicated one, and I've got some theories and there's a bit of evidence, but I think there's more research to be done along the lines of answering that question.
So a lot of people talk about math being a big obstacle to entering economics, but based on what you just said about economics lagging behind even STEM fields and other math-based or highly technical fields, why might economics have any differences?
Right. So there's a huge misconception that it's the math component of economics that's keeping women away, and that's actually not the situation. About 45% of math majors at the undergraduate level are women. So women major in math at a higher rate than they do in economics. Other studies, with regression evidence show that math isn't the factor that explains the gap. What we do with that math may be presented in a less appealing way within the context of economics classes.
Could you explain that a little bit more? What do you mean by that?
Sure. Well, I was very fortunate as an undergraduate that the professor I had for my intro class really was very good at explaining the power and relevance of the economics discipline to addressing and potentially solving important individual, societal, and global problems. But I don't know that every class is taught in that way. To the extent that men and women come to college with different preconceptions about what economics is or what careers they may want to pursue, if we don't take active efforts at the undergraduate level to explain clearly what is possible with economics training, we're not going to win any converts.
You know, I'm just kind of curious, you mentioned your undergraduate experience. Can you tell us a little bit more about kind of how you came to the profession?
Oh, that's a funny question. I do have a story, a brief one, but I do tell it to my students. The summer before my first semester in college, I needed to sign up for 4 courses for the fall, and I selected economics as one of them. My father looked at my preliminary selections and said, "Oh, don't take economics. That was the dullest, driest, most boring course I've ever encountered. I want you to start your college career off right with exciting topics." So I erased, yes, it was in pencil, and I erased the economics selection and chose some philosophy course or something. I didn't come back to economics until the spring of my sophomore year, so relatively late. But economics was a popular major at my college, so it found me. And once I was in that class, I was hooked. So I try to provide the same excitement to my students as I was able to experience in my first econ class.
So that sounds like a great undergraduate experience. But then as you moved through the profession in graduate school and then getting tenure and becoming a professor, did you personally experience any of this gender bias that we've been discussing?
Oh, absolutely. I was not really aware of my gender, or gender was not really a big part of my identity before being surrounded by economists and finding myself as the only or one of only a few women in the room. And that alone does not bother me. I don't mind being different. But when it started to affect my productivity, that I did mind. You know, if, say, professors in graduate school felt awkward meeting with women students, you know, it affects their ability, the student's ability to develop research topics and the important connections, professional connections that you need to succeed. So, you know, those kinds of strained, I guess, interactions have an impact to the extent that the methods or topics that diverse students or economists want to teach are stifled, then that too affects the productivity, not only of the individual, but of the profession as a whole. And that's really the point of our paper. So Cecilia Rouse at Princeton and I wrote a paper that appeared recently in the Journal of Economic Perspectives. And we wrote that paper to address 3 large misconceptions in the profession. The first was that there's no problem. Many economists aren't really aware of the disparities that do exist along gender or racial and ethnic lines within the profession. So showing some basic data on those disparities was our first task. But the second misconception is, well, that's not a problem. And there are economists who will say, well, the gender or racial identity of an economist doesn't matter. Two people can add 2 + 2 the same way and come up with the same answer of 4. But there are increasing numbers of studies that document quite rigorously the impact on the profession and our potential to generate knowledge and policies that are powerful. And then the third misconception that we address in the paper is, well, that's not my problem, meaning that economists typically, in part because of the tools and frameworks that we use to study social and behavioral outcomes, focused a lot on the supply side, focused on what attributes or tastes women were bringing to the profession that caused them perhaps not to endure within the profession. And the paper lays out, to my mind, a volume of very well done research evidence documenting the demand side factors that explain, in perhaps large part, the gender disparities in our profession.
Let's circle back to the second misconception for a second.
Sure.
So as a woman, I'm definitely interested in the effect gender bias will have on me, but why should anyone else care?
Great question. It's not just a matter of fairness. There's efficiency. And so diversity of individuals within a group affects the productivity of that group. And the lack of diversity in our profession likely hampers our whole discipline, constraining the range of issues that we address and limiting our collective ability to understand familiar issues from new perspectives. So there are really two sorts of mechanisms by which this occurs. One, the more diverse the group of people around the table, the greater range of insights and perspectives that are going to be presented. So as women, our life experiences may have led us encounter a new kind of economic situation or a new kind of barrier to our own progress that may not have been apparent to someone without that same life experience, as one narrow example. But the other mechanism is that once you get a diverse group together, the behavior of the individuals within that group changes. So it's the context that changes the behavior. And in fact, each of us holds ourselves more accountable, does more homework, questions our own assumptions, questions others' assumptions, and ultimately, we each become more innovative and better at solving complex problems when we're working amongst people who are not like us.
So if diversity is so helpful to the profession of economics, then why haven't we seen more progress? Is it a lack of awareness? Is it more intentional? Or is it, even if you are aware, there's some barrier to actually acting on diversity?
Yeah, so that's the million-dollar question, right? Or maybe more. So I do think there's a lack of awareness. And along the three dimensions that I've already outlined, there are some misconceptions. And once economists see that the disparities exist, that they're having efficiency effects, and that there are things that we already in the profession can do to address these disparities and close the gaps, I do think that will motivate many to take additional action. But, I think that may not include everyone, and it may boil down to a sort of collective action problem where it may be best for centralized authorities, collective groups, whether they be organized through the AEA or at the university level, to work together to take action.
You know, I was curious to get your response to this recent paper that came out. Undergraduate Alice Wu wrote, kind of looking at data from Econ Job Market Rumors. It's been very much in the news recently, and I think a lot of people were very surprised at just how how crude some of the language was that was used toward women, and just how severe the issue was that was outlined in her paper. I kind of wanted to just get your reaction to that paper and some of the discussion that's happened around it.
I'm so glad that she wrote this paper. It does not surprise me. I've been on that discussion board and I've seen the conversation, and the sexism and racism and other isms are rampant. I have just made a personal commitment not to visit that site, even though it occasionally provides information that is useful for me in my professional life. It's great that now a much larger group of people is noting the phenomenon and perhaps doing something to address it. My position is that even if we get rid of that online forum and silence those bad apples, the rest of us have much work to do. So those of us already in the profession who are so well-meaning and so shocked by what's going on, the behaviors reported in the Wu paper, we're not innocent ourselves. You know, even myself as a woman, and even myself as someone who's an expert in diversity, inclusion, innovation, we need to be vigilant and examine our own biases and our own habits that may be holding others back.
You know, I was wondering how reflective of the profession that online discussions like those are. You know, I find it difficult to believe that that people walking around interacting in economics departments are speaking that way, the way they would in an online community. And there was even some pushback saying, well, you know, a lot of these people aren't economists. You know, they're just trolls, you know, on this message board. But I was wondering about if you could kind of explain what gender bias looks like in a lot of econ departments these ways. I mean, it's not nearly that explicit.
No. The language and behaviors I see on that board are not what goes on day to day in the departments, at least that I've visited, and I have seen many. I do think that many of the participants on that discussion board are economists, given the detailed knowledge of inside baseball that they have, and, you know, turnaround times at journals and whatnot. So what are the day-to-day barriers within the typical economics department? Is that your question?
Yeah, just, you know, kind of some more practical ways, some things that even people within economics departments may not be aware that they're doing that contributes to this gender gap and gender bias.
Sure. Well, there are lots of subtle barriers that we put up, whether it's responding to student comments or questions or requests, or in our lives as members of search committees looking to hire new colleagues. We have biases and we have habits that keep us from enriching the profession with a more diverse group of people. On the recruiting end, it's been documented that, you know, there are implicit biases, implicit associations, so that, for instance, I don't know, think of a prominent, respected economist. Think of someone who, to you, epitomizes the height of our profession. Can you picture someone like that?
Sure.
All right. What's that person look like? Perhaps you have a particular individual in mind.
I do.
Right.
Are you asking me to lay bare my male biases here?
No, I wouldn't want to do that.
I mean, I'll admit that I'm thinking of Al Roth.
That's exactly who I was thinking of too. Really? Only because I've got his picture on my computer. Yeah.
Right. Oh, let's see, little subtle triggers like that. You know, whose pictures are around, you know, that makes an impact as well, right? They contribute to our unconscious associations between economic, or let's say quality and skill in economics, and the personal identity of the economist. So yes, we have implicit biases. We tend to hire from elite universities, which They themselves are going to give us a certain subset of the population. So there are a range of steps we can take to limit the effects of biases and habits on our decisions and ultimately be better off for it.
And who is putting up these barriers, whether in the classroom at the undergraduate level, during the hiring process, or elsewhere in economics? Is it just men discriminating against women, or how do women's biases play out as well?
Right, right. We're all in the same society, the same culture that sends us, you know, and has been sending us for the length of our lives, these subtle messages. And so whether we ourselves identify as male or female or whatever, we're still influenced by those. And it takes active work to fight those stereotypes.
I've heard that it's hard to get ahead in economics when you're studying gender. And you mentioned that it's something that all of us need to do to really fix this problem. So how do you become a female economist without giving up any of your potential avenues for advancement because you're studying gender?
Well, I might be. There are many economic problems that intrigue me. Would they be better received by the profession? Would they be published in or more easily published in various venues? Perhaps. I mean, there is evidence to the effect that it's harder for women to present research on disparities and be successful. But, you know, I guess personally, if you're asking, I'm motivated by a larger purpose. Success in terms of traditional markers is not as important to me as making sure the world is a better place once I leave it, and contributing my professional expertise to solving important problems carries me forward.
So this is something that you individually have taken responsibility for addressing, but I'm wondering if there's some obvious things that departments need to be doing to address this problem. What are some of the most obvious solutions as you see it?
Let me circle back to a point I made earlier in our conversation about the importance of how we present economics to undergraduates, because many of us in the profession have the opportunity to have a real impact on undergraduates' academic and career choices. And we shouldn't lose that opportunity to convey accurately, you know, the power and relevance of our discipline, that we have this amazing set of tools that can address the very important societal problems. So I think one of the most important things departments can do is to revise how they present economics to undergraduates, reconsidering both the content of courses and the methods by which the content is taught. Economists tend to be lecturers, and maybe you can tell that by listening to me now, but students really engage with the material much more intensely when they get to discover it themselves. So STEM scientists have already discovered how important it is to have active learning in the classroom, to use a different set of techniques than just lecture.
I'm a bit confused, though. I mean, how would changing teaching format, I mean, that just sounds like going to better teaching. How would that address a gender gap?
Well, it's going to help all students. Right. But it's going to have, and the empirical evidence shows this, an outsized impact on students who have a weaker tie to the field to begin with. Maybe they have less experience with economics because of high school training, or they have less encouragement from family or society to explore economics. So it's all of us on the margins who would be less engaged by less engaging teaching techniques. All right, so there is going to be benefit for all students to improve teaching, but the evidence indicates that it will especially help those who are not already identifying with economics. But I've got to say, the other point that I want to make to instructors is for them to investigate the research evidence behind having a growth mindset. So many economists come into the classroom assuming that students either will get it or not get it. And so our job as a faculty member would be simply to help students select themselves, sort themselves into appropriate fields. And maybe some students don't seem like they're going to be great economists, so we'll just, given their fixed skill set, so we'll encourage them to go into humanities or maybe political science. And the research shows that having that kind of fixed mindset, both on the part of the instructor and the student themselves, really dampens learning and engagement. The evidence indicates that the students actually achieve. They learn better when we have these open attitudes.
These are some solutions that we can consciously act on, but how do we deal with implicit bias?
Right. So there's a substantial body of literature, being accumulated over the last three decades or more in other disciplines, notably psychology, as well as others, documenting the existence and impact of implicit biases. And that literature has expanded into looking at measures to reduce or confine the effects of these biases. So again, I point you to that literature for specifics, but the steps to take to reduce implicit bias are of two sorts. One is trying to teach ourselves as individuals new associations or weaken the old negative ones. And we can do that through practices such as perspective taking. But the other sort of solution, which can be carried on in concert with those individual efforts, come in changing the rules and environment in which decisions or evaluations are made. So when, for instance, evaluators are looking at candidates who have applied for a job, if the evaluators take their time, if they perform the evaluations when they're not tired, if they have pre-committed to a set of criteria on which each application will be evaluated, those sorts of disciplining rules and conditions lessen the impact of any implicit biases on the ultimate decision.
What idea do you most want the profession to take away at this moment in terms of addressing the gender gap and gender bias?
I guess the one message, if I had to boil it down to one, would be for us each to take responsibility, that it is really on us to create a more fair and efficient profession. The pipeline analogy, which has been used over the years and in many contexts to describe the flow of individuals into a career or profession, has been criticized in part because it suggests that there's just one way to become an economist, and you kind of get in at the beginning of the pipeline and you stay in and you become an economist. And other academics and researchers have noted that there are multiple pathways to the same end goal or outcome. But I don't like the pipeline analogy because it makes us passive. It suggests that we already in the profession are sitting at the end of the pipeline waiting for the product to be delivered to us. And that's actually not the reality of the situation, that we're positioned all along the pipeline, if you will, and there are students at various stages of their careers and colleagues at various stages of their careers flowing through. And we're there not plugging leaks, not pumping to strengthen the flow, and in fact, maybe even taking a torch to the pipeline and creating new leaks. So we are active participants in the development of others' careers. And once we recognize that, then we can change our actions, both the large formal decisions and the smaller everyday interactions, to be more supportive and positive influence on others' careers.
That's our interview with Swarthmore Professor Amanda Bayer. For other interviews with authors, as well as articles and charts highlighting the latest economics research, check out our website, aeaweb.org. Thanks for listening.